I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, folks, welcome into the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. MWR.com is where you can find. What do we get there, Matt? Just the Mountain West stuff, I'm assuming. Is that our deal, what we do here?
Lots and lots of Mountain West stuff, yes.
If you're new, that's a lame joke I tried to make. Also, I should put a timestamp on this because it is currently, we are in June. It is June 7th, and we are starting our team-by-team 2023 Mountain West football team preview. So we say the date because Rams fans may find this on August 4th, on July 19th. They may find it June 9th. However, it could be out of date just because for longtime listeners, we don't want a Donald Hammond situation, which was not a good luck. So Troy Horton, Clay Millen, stay in school. Don't have any issues. We want everything to keep going so we don't have to read these stuff. But we mentioned the date because things obviously change. People find these later on throughout the year. These are our team previews team one of 12. We will do one a week. Release date, we're recording Wednesday. We normally release these Sunday, so expect one a week. We're just trying to get our schedule nailed down right now, so we just chose, hey, why not do it Wednesday? So our plan will be June 7th. So our plan will be once a week. We'll see what day, but just check our feed, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, all that type of stuff when people sell the time. However you're listening to this, keep subscribing that same way. That's the best way to put it, Matt, instead of like naming every service out there.
Yeah.
So introduce, what team are we doing today? Who our fan vote on MWCR Twitter, Matt, selected?
Colorado State.
Oh, the Rams. Ooh. Out of four teams we voted. So we'll also have a Twitter vote every week or every couple of days or some level of consistency to figure it out. But that was our vote. I'm going to put you on the spot because I don't have it in front of me either. What were the other four teams? I know Hawaii was one of them.
Hawaii, New Mexico, and Nevada.
Okay, and these are just, this is your order, so people can blame you. However, this was just a random order?
Was that picked, you know, four teams that I figure, I actually didn't have much reasoning behind it. What I can tell you as well is the next time we do one of these Twitter polls at MWC Wire, it'll be four new teams.
Oh, so we're not going to go to the split zone, do where they keep teams in there and keep going?
No, that's how I've always done it. We put new teams in every single time.
I do appreciate, I'm going to sound like Rams fans like me, so I'll suck up to you guys, which is totally true. You're not just sucking up. I'm glad the Rams got this week out of these teams because I am most excited about CSU. My record may not say it, Matt, but I have who doesn't want to see Troy Horton light it up again and Clay Millen take the next step? I'm not going to go too deep into this type of stuff, but for the teams that have the most potential to have a increase or a better season, I think the Rams are near the top of the conference.
I think you're probably right. Like, if you're looking for the team that might make a jump from like 3 wins to 8 wins, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, something like that. Like, I think they'll improve because Jay Norvell, because remember when he was with Nevada the first time around, he had, oh geez, it took him a couple years to find Cody Fajardo to be a good quarterback.
Went 3-9 in the first year at Nevada as well.
Yeah, they weren't great. It took a minute before they've got Cody Fajardo after a couple years. Carson Strong obviously came in. So they had a good run there, but what do you remember from 2022 for the Rams? Kind of before we springboard in 23, besides not getting that many wins.
I remember being relatively bullish on the strategy that Norvell had employed to put his first roster together in Fort Collins. You know, they christened it Fort Air Raid. You know, they brought in a lot of talent from Reno to Colorado State. you know, and really hit the transfer portal a lot harder than a lot of other teams in the Mountain West. And so I think I had an expectation, especially coming off of sort of a disastrous end to the Steve Dazio era, that the odds of a bounce back were pretty strong, if not necessarily like a true cinch, you might say. And that wasn't really what we got from the Rams last season. It wasn't the year that I think a lot of fans in the city expected, certainly not what I expected. You know, you look at their non-conference play in particular, and you recognize that they had maybe one good quarter while going 0-4 in September. But, you know, despite finishing 3-9, despite finishing 126th in overall SP+, you know, 117th in net points per drive and all that, you know, if you look a little closer, you do see that they found ways to pivot last year as a team, and they found ways to improve, even if the win-loss record didn't always show it. You know, one of the things that really jumps out when you look back at how last year unfolded, the offense really struggled despite some standout individual performances. Like, they scored, I believe, no more than 19 points in a game last year. But yeah, at the same time, but at the same time, you know, the defense improved in ways that weren't always apparent if you weren't paying attention. You know, they ended up, you know, at 501 score games. They were 2-2 altogether. So, yeah, it wasn't the year that they wanted. But I do think, you know, you mentioned Torrey Horton, you mentioned Clay Millen, you know, those two are just, you know, among a number of reasons why I think it's fair for CSU fans to remain optimistic, to remain bullish. And for my part, even if I'm not necessarily forecasting a big jump ahead this year, it's not to say that that isn't well within the realm of possibility. I think it's fair to say that, you know, to buy stock in this roster, in this program.
Yeah, I'll give you a pop quiz here. Maybe you know this, you're not looking at it. So the Rams offense, despite having Torrey Horton, like one of the best, he's a preseason All-American for Per Athlon at the moment, and possibly others. Do you know they scored? Do you want to know what team only scored? If I'm looking at this properly here, hold on, right team here. So there's only one for the whole season. Where were they ranking in score, total points? Do you have any clue within a conference?
Not off the top of my head.
Where do you think they're better than Wyoming scoring offense?
I mean, what I can tell you is they were 128th in points per drive. That's what I was.
So they're like, okay, so that you're on the right track. So they scored 158 points all last year. New Mexico, the worst team in the conference, was 1 point behind them. 157. And we look at the Rams last year. That's why I think the big jump is there. But they had so many blow losses. They got blown up by Michigan, which, whatever, playoff team, they're quite good, obviously. Kinda hung double-digit loss to Middle Tennessee State. Double-digit loss to Washington State. Sacramento State got their butt kicked. Boise State, they got their butt kicked. Double-digit loss to San Jose State and Air Force. They were not close in games. And then they had the one big win over New Mexico 17-0. They were not good in certain lot of areas. Like, their defense clearly giving up 51, 34, 41 points last year, 49. They have to, if they come in, like I mentioned before, like the 10% thing, if they get 10% better in certain areas, this could lead to a couple more wins. But just based off last year, remember, even though Torrey Horton, wasn't he one of the league leaders in yards per catch? The offensive line was a lot of quick passes. So it is amazing how well I know a lot of them were short, not necessarily all deep bombs like Romeo Dubs we saw with Nevada a couple years ago, those 50-plus yarders. Torrey Horton, he wasn't chucking it deep all the time to Torrey Horton. But imagine, and maybe we'll start to get to the quarterback stuff here, imagine if he gets more time to throw the ball, if he's more comfortable. Because he completed the pass, the playbook they gave to him from Jane Revelle, he completed, what is it, freshman record, I believe it was, not FBS record of some sort, 72%. So imagine if he actually has time and could see the field instead of, shoot, I got to do this dump off pass or quick screen or do a slant across the middle to a tight end or something, a quick short pass. That, I think, is where there could be the big growth. And Clay Millen, I'm going to make some bold predictions throughout. I didn't ask you to do this, but we can. And we kind of made some predictions last year or last week or last show, whatever that was. I think there's an outside chance. I got two bold predictions here. One for Clay Millen. I think there is a legit chance if things go well, like perfectly, I'm saying, he could be like a second team all-conference quarterback. I think he has that potential. I don't know if he'll get it because win-loss record matters and scoring points matters, but I think his talent could be right close to on par with guys like with Green from Boise State and Shavon Cordero, those type of guys. I think he's in that same neighborhood. And I think there's a chance with Torrey Horton helping him out a lot, he can maybe be that number two QB in the conference. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea because, you know, what you saw last year was a young quarterback who definitely took a beating. You know, he absorbed 54 sacks, which, you know, I always prefer to look at rate stats. And so, you know, you see that the Rams had a team sack rate allowed of 15.7%, which was, as you might expect, dead last in the country, and not particularly close to anybody else. But yeah, at the same time, you know, you saw him flash potential anyway. You know, you mentioned him setting the record for, you know, completion rate by a freshman quarterback. You know, according to Pro Football Focus, yeah, I believe he was second overall among FBS quarterbacks with an 82.4% adjusted completion rate as well, which accounts for things, you know, like drops and things along those lines. But I think more instructively, you know, you also have to realize that he was also second best in the Mountain West last year, at least among qualifying quarterbacks, in yards per attempt, 8.2 altogether. And, you know, to sort of dip back into PFF again real quick, he was also eighth, you know, overall with a 7.3% big time throw percentage. So there was a question that we got from one of our followers at CSU RamT. You know, he was saying, you know, if in December he's considered a top FBS QB, make the case for why. And I think the main part of the case is can he get the time? Can he get more opportunities to stretch the field more often? Because setting a freshman record is impressive. But one of the things that really jumped out to me that was sort of a measure of his success, which you alluded to a few minutes ago, his average depth of target was 11th out of 13 qualifying quarterbacks in the Mountain West last year. Only 7.7 yards. Yeah, well, better is sort of relative with a metric like that. I think, yeah, you know, if he can hold on to most of that yards per attempt average while also making more big time throws. And again, you know, I believe he had, and I'm looking this up as I talk, 33 plays of 20 or more yards through the air. That was fourth in the conference. And that was despite the fact that, you know, you might think that he was, you know, having to handle a lot. And that wasn't really the case. Like, he only averaged 23 attempts per game last year. You know, he was basically neck and neck with Andrew Peasley. Let's put it that way.
Oh boy, that's not some category you want to be in.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, he wasn't shouldering a huge workload, and he was able to, you know, do the most with what was given to him. You know, he was making the smart decision more often than not, just checking it down, because, you know, he didn't really have time behind the offensive line that was put in front of him. But when they gave him time, you know, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I think back to that third quarter of the Middle Tennessee game. That is the quarterback that Rams fans are hoping to see more often this year.
I think, and the number of sacks, while you mentioned, don't necessarily go to total, but it's also the most in FBS. So there's that as well. So it's not good. So if
there's nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, I hope so. We don't want another David Carr situation, but not good, about the Texans in the early 2000s. But if they can, like, the offensive line, we did our rankings. I'm looking at Athlon here. They put them basically dead last offensive line rankings. Somebody asked about transfers coming in, D2, FCS. I'm like, I don't know. Sorry, guys. I don't know that much about who could be coming in, because there's probably guys lingering in the portal. But this time of year, if you're getting guys in the portal, not in the team, probably weren't that great in the first place. No offense to people, but that's kind of what it is at this time of year if you haven't chosen a school yet. So the offensive line, like, there's experience. Actually, there's not really. I think only Jacob Gardner, the center, is the only real technical starter back. They do have some upperclassmen who are listed as starters, but all brand new. So maybe this could be a good thing where it's brand new people. They've been in the system a bit. They can't be worse, like you said. This is going to be the biggest, like an offensive role. They only bring back, I believe, four starters. Two receivers, Horton, Justice Ross, Simmons, obviously Clay Millen, the Gardner I just mentioned. Because running back situation, we'll get to, that's a sticky situation with a potential guy's not available. Avery Morrow there specifically. But maybe the new guys, they learned a lot. Maybe I'm overstretching and kind of being super positive, but they didn't play last year for a reason, Matt. So if these guys can be, like you said, that's the thing. Like,
so
at least
before we talk about like running backs and stuff like that, do we want to talk about the offensive line?
We're already kind of there. Might as well. Let's go.
I was going to say, usually tends to come up a little later in the discussion, but I do think that, you know, the fortunes of that unit and Millen's fortunes are inextricably linked, because it's easy to say that there's nowhere to go but up, but it's not necessarily a given, especially considering, like you mentioned, that there is so much turnover. You know, as far as the experience they have coming back, it really sort of depends on your definition. Because, you know, on the one hand, like Brian Crespo-Jaquez was the starter at left tackle before he suffered that season-ending injury in week one against Michigan, actually. So, you know, they had to shuffle through three different players at left tackle. You know, they had four different centers start last year, including Keegan Hamilton, who started for the last five games. He's back. Gardner's back, Crespo-Jaquez is back, but it is, you know, sort of that legion of new offensive linemen that they found from the portal, which it's going to be sort of messy isn't the right word for it, but there's a lot to prove there because they're bringing in so many new faces from the transfer portal. You know, Savion Henderson, who according to Colorado, and I believe it was Kelly Lytle, who put out a depth chart back in March, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably, you know, left tackle, coming in, right?
Had him slated at left tackle. You know, Oliver Jervis from Monmouth, you know, Drew Moss, Bobby Lawrence more recently from Missouri. You know, regardless of who steps up and clinches those starting jobs, you know, the sack rate, of course, is the big thing. But I think more broadly, you know, it's just a unit that needs to improve in a lot of different facets. You know, this was an offensive line that last year was also 110th in power success rate. So they were not particularly successful in short yardage situations on the ground. You know, only 61.1% of conversions for a first down or a touchdown. And, you know, a 21.6% stuff rate, which was 119th. So it's not just about protecting Millen. It's just about getting better, period.
Yeah, and they're going to have to be better, clearly, with who they have coming back. This unit, out of the whole team, because defense still returns about half the guys. I honestly think this is the most, if they're going to have success and maybe flirt with the bowl game, this has to be the most improved unit on the team.
Yes.
Because Millen, like we mentioned, he can complete a bunch of passes. He has a legit Blitnikoff Rob wide receiver and Torrey Horton here. He's that good, which the Rams obviously have Richard Higgins, Michael Gallup, all these guys the past couple of years have been doing extremely well. I don't know how they find these guys, but if they give him time to throw the line, like cut his sacks down to 40. Okay, that's still three a game. That's a lot, but that's 19 less than what you're getting last year. And that could make the biggest difference. And we don't know how good Clay Millen could be if he has time to throw down the field. Like you mentioned, average depth of target could improve. His yards per attempt will definitely improve. Well, it should improve. You throw farther down the field. His percentage, I don't see. There's no way he's going to keep 72% of his passes. Keep him around 65, but he's more productive and more explosive. I'd take that. And the line has to protect him. And yeah. I don't know. You bring transfers in. They get no warm-ups. Washington State is game number one. Game number two is who is it?
Colorado.
Colorado, which not great, but who knows? They're going to be able to have a Power 5 team, even though they won two games last year. There's no easing into the schedule is what I'm getting at. A rival game, things like that for CU, but maybe the offensive line don't care because they're not really known about the rivalry, but they've got to be better. And give Clay Millen a touch more to run, open the holes for running back, whoever that's going to be. But this is the area where three new starters at least are coming in. They're going to, it's going to be interesting. You may not know this, but I don't know it either. Did all these guys come in during spring practice or did they come after? Do you recall if they participated?
I believe of the names that I mentioned, the most recent addition was Bobby Lawrence. I believe everybody else was in for spring.
Well, that's helpful. The guys can come and actually practice. I knew some, wasn't entirely sure how many. So, yeah, if they can get a little bit better, like, seriously, a little bit better can go a long way for what talent they have receiving and catching the ball and throwing the ball. Now, running back, Matt, there's a situation where, oh, boy. It looks like, is it going to be Kenworth? Is it Kenworth? Is that how you say his name? Kenworth Edwards? The JUCO transfer?
You know what? That's a good question, because you mentioned Avery Morrow.
He's not around.
And his situation is kind of up in the air as we're recording this in early June.
And depth chart said Edwards.
Yeah. Had a felony arrest in January. Was suspended for spring practice. So who knows? Obviously, you'll be able to check back on that, you know, once fall camp rolls around, I'm sure. They'll have made a decision one way or the other. I think they may have brought in the answer from the transfer portal, though, in Kobe Johnson.
Oh, Kobe Johnson.
From North Dakota State.
Okay.
You know, national runners-up last year. He was the team's leading rusher, 961 yards, 7.4 yards per carry and 9 touchdowns. And, you know, I didn't know much about him before I was doing the unit rankings that we did about a month ago now at this point, you know, depth rankings and all that. And I learned that, you know, he was a relatively recent addition to the transfer portal, so I don't believe he was in for spring practice. But you go find some of his highlights on YouTube down the stretch last year. That guy can play.
In North Dakota State, put guys in the NFL, quarterbacks, offensive linemen, they get guys out there.
Had over 200 yards in a playoff win over Montana. Had 3 touchdowns and 136 yards in a win over Incarnate Word. You know, I believe set a school record with a 91-yard kickoff return, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, he's a guy who could do a little bit of everything. And, you know, coming from a program like North Dakota State, that he's used to playing and with sort of, like, championship-type expectations. And I do think that that's going to be an asset for a team that's learning how to win. I think he'll be able to go in and really set a tone. And then if Morrow isn't ready to see the field, he could be that guy who takes on, you know, 20 carries per game to sort of take the load off of Millen in the same way that Morrow did last year.
You'll think they'll have a guy get 20 a game?
I think if anybody does, then Johnson is likely to be the candidate to do so.
Okay. Edwards, like I mentioned him, he is a JUCO guy, so experience is a big jump up. He's pretty explosive. So there's a couple guys. Look at some numbers here. He had, what, 580 yards in 2 games? That's pretty good. So if they get multiple guys to do something well, clearly, it's going to be helpful. And if Morrow can't come back, if he's suspension the and stuff, incredible who knows his status.
In his career, Johnson has averaged, across 4 seasons, he averaged 6.7 yards per carry.
That's pretty good. Very good.
That's absurd.
So, yeah, whoever it's going to be, have depth. Okay. If Morrow comes back, great. I don't expect him to come back, but Edwards, these other guys from North Dakota State, Jones, everything, it's going to be, there's potential there. We just don't know.
Yeah.
They've had success other places. Can they take it to the next higher level to get up there? So it's a big question mark. So wide receiver group.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What did we? I'm trying to pull up our staff ranking. Trevor Dish, Torrey Horton. How much better do you think he could be if Clay Millen actually in the offensive line get better? Like, what is it? Was I over the top saying he's a Blitnikoff finalist and that's his potential, maybe even winner?
I mean, if things come together with like the sort of 90th or 99th percentile type of outcome, no, I don't see why not.
Okay. All right.
I mean, let's put it this way. Like, even just like down the stretch last year in particular, four November games, 30 catches, 530 yards, and in three touchdowns, 17.7 yards per catch.
Okay. He's very, like, honestly, he's like one of the, like, I meant to rattle off the best guys they had. He's up there to be one of the best for having mm-hmm. QBs had. Offense, not, what's the right way to put it? Just be terrible almost at times, not productive. That's the way to put it. So yeah,
the trick is going to be building around him, though.
Yeah, dude. But they got Ross Simmons there. He's pretty good. Justice Ross Simmons.
He had, what, I'm 40... excited to watch Justice Ross Simmons this year.
Well, what makes you excited about him? What gets you going?
Well, one, he's like physically speaking, like there aren't a lot of receivers like him in the conference. Like he's what, 6'4"? What is he listed at? 6'3". Excuse me, 6'3", 200 pounds. So he's a relatively big target, and he stepped into the starting lineup, after, they had so many defections early last year, like after, Melquan Stovall and Dante Wright and Ty McCullough left the program. He stepped in, and though it took a while for him to really come into his own, like he too also had a really strong stretch run, in four November games, just to go back to that for a moment. 14 catches, 237 yards, and a touchdown. As a freshman, that'll play.
Yeah,
I think there may be some kind of learning curve. Like you don't want to thrust, too high expectations on someone that's still relatively young. But I think, if there's a breakout candidate on this offense, I think the biggest name to keep an eye on is Ross Simmons. But I think, if he's the most obvious candidate, then that's going to put a lot of pressure on the guys who, saw a lot of playing time last year without necessarily putting up a lot of numbers to, sort of step up and be those, tertiary pieces that can make the offense really dangerous. So, like, if you think back to Norvell's days at Nevada, you had Romeo Dubs, you had Elijah Cooks, but you also had Justin Lockhart, for example, before he transferred to San Jose State.
Exactly.
And I think that Colorado State has those types of guys on hand. They have like Lewis Brown, for example, only 12 catches last year, but he was their primary receiver out of the slot. So I would have to imagine that role is going to be more or less set. Mekhi Fox, also a sophomore, he's back, and they brought in Dallin Holker, the BYU tight end, to presumably replace Tanner Arkin, who transferred to Illinois. So they've got some interesting pieces. They have a lot of upside. But I think the main hazard, such as it is that a lot of this group still skews very young. And so it's important to remember that not all growth is linear. So there may be some growing pains, which could cost the team a game or two this year, even as they continue to grow into themselves.
Yeah, I do. I am surprised. Look at these all conference things. I think Dallin Holker has a guy because he's one of the better tight ends at BYU before he left. It was kind of shocking when we heard he transferred, and I was like, "Whoa, he's pretty good." And he just up and left, I think, after a month. So I wouldn't be shocked. Like, he's a guy where over the middle type stuff, which could stretch the field for Horton or even Ross Simmons or somebody else, Lewis Brown perhaps. But he could be like, he should be in the running and should be considered. Like, when we do our top 50, I don't know if we'll make that. He could, I think, a possibility, but I think he has potential to be an all conference tight end in the league. And if they have another pass catcher, that's clearly going to make them one step better. And I think he has that potential to be maybe like one of the top three tight ends of conference.
And you know what? I forgot to mention Dylan Goffney as well, the recent transfer pickup from SMU. Didn't see a ton of playing time over the last 2 years with the Mustangs, but last year in particular, 17 catches on 21 targets, Yeah, 20.8 yards per reception and 2 touchdowns. So he's probably someone worth keeping an eye on as well.
We should. Our staff put the Rams offense of our wide receivers at number 2 overall, only behind Boise State. So that's
there's a lot of upside there.
There's lots of upside. Anything to aim more on offense, or do we go to defense now?
I think we can move to the other side of the ball.
So should we get the big question people had about where do we put the defensive line?
Yeah. And I went back and I looked at our depth rankings, and we had the defensive line 5th in particular.
Yes.
And I think a lot of that has to do, perhaps obviously, with Muhammad Kamara, who, you know, bar none, is one of the best pass rushers in the conference. You know, according to PFF, 35 hurries, 16 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks. He's a dominant force when he's on his game. But I think, you know, his sort of highlight reel really obscures the fact that as a group, they did improve relatively quietly as a unit, you know, to help the units behind them, the linebackers and the secondary, to be able to do their jobs as well. It's going to be really interesting to see how they replace CJ Onyechi in particular, because he was, you know, Onyechi was someone who got off to a slow start, I think, and really improved as the season progressed. But, you know, like we just talked about with the wide receivers, you know, other than Kamara, this is still a unit that, you know, has plenty of its own youngsters, you know, capable of stepping up and having a much better year than they did in their sort of their trial by fire. You know, case in point, you know, I mentioned Grady Kelly on a recent podcast, redshirt sophomore defensive tackle. You know, he and Cam Barreto combined last year for 23 hurries. And that may not seem like much, given that I think they only had like 2.5 combined TFLs. But I think the potential is there to turn a few more of those pressures into TFLs or into the occasional sack and things like that. And I think that duo in particular is going to be really important for a defense that in general is going to have to figure out how to generate more consistent disruption. Because other than Kamara, no one else back on this year's defense had more than 4 TFLs last year.
Yeah, you got to have that pressure. When they play teams, like when we look at the quarterback situation within the conference, we're not talking about non-con, but like Utah State, Cooper got a good quarterback, Taylor Green, Boise, Doug Brumfield, Vegas, you have maybe not great, but experienced, Andrew Peasley. And then you have like San Diego State, Hawaii has Brandon Traeger, a lot of experienced quarterbacks back. So they're going to improve and get after those guys and make sacks or get in the QB's face. They're not going against any newbies out there. So that's going to be something also to think about too. Like, okay, this quarterback, his team as well. It may not matter if the offensive line for those teams aren't good, but if you're going up against good quarterbacks, they take the next step. Like half those guys I mentioned are set first, are probably second-year starters, like Peasley is, I think, the most experienced of that group. Mm-hmm. And you got good quarterbacks back there. It's going to be just another challenge to get after a guy who's that good. They're not just first-year starters. So that's something, too, to consider of who they're playing a quarterback and how they can attack them and if they'll be successful against guys who are reasonably experienced back there or are going to most likely take the next step, like with Maiden and Taylor Green as well, specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the good news is that they appear to be pretty deep. So I would have to think that, you know, knock on wood, they could survive if the injury bug does hit them. Because like we didn't even mention, you know, guys like James Mitchell, Mukendi Wa-Kalonji, you know, other guys like that, or even, you know, guys who've come into the program more recently, like, you know, Kennedy McDowell, whose friends, I would assume, call him Mayhem McDowell. One of the great new nicknames in the Mountain West. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Heck yeah. Anytime you get Mayhem, it's the Allstate guy, but it's better because there's a reason that works.
There you go.
Mayhem, that's get him on a NIL deal next to 30 Rock Mayhem guy because people know him as Mayhem.
There you go.
But I know him as the Pager King on 30 Rock.
Yeah. And then they also brought in Matt Thomas from Rhode Island to do the transfer portal. So I don't think that depth will be a problem. But, you know, they're definitely going to need others beyond Kamara to produce because, you know, even with his big numbers last year, they were still only 79th in team sack rate. among FBS defenses, only 5.8%, 95th with a 15.3% stuff rate. So just getting into the backfield, they were below average odds. And so, like, if they can't replace Onyechi and they can't help, they can't get Kamara some help, those numbers could trend in the wrong direction if they're not careful.
Definitely. Now let's move on to linebackers, where they do run a unique 4-2-5 situation. They only put two linebackers out there, and they both bring in, or they're non-starters like Chase Wilson, according to certain depth charts. You got Chase Wilson, Drew Kolek back there. But that's going to be another area, like their front, like defensive line should be good. Obviously, we put them slightly above average. But if you bring in two linebackers, I know it's only two starters or whatever, two guys out of 11. But if that's all you got there, I guess the only good thing, Matt, would be that you're not running three or four linebackers on the field at once. I know technically they're whatever you want to call their third, or I guess their fifth cornerback or fifth DB or third CB is kind of a hybrid. Nickelback, I guess that's their each team has a little different name for it. That guy's kind of a linebacker, but not having to run out three to four traditional linebackers when you're not returning any starters, I guess that's a good thing. But maybe one thing that's always helpful, we notice like, oh, this guy at the front nose tackle, defensive end doesn't gets always doubled or they make big plays. Well, this could clearly open up other things for the linebackers if guys on the defensive line are making big plays. Like, well, we'll double him or clip him, but it could lead for like a straight shot. But they have a couple of players that, like you mentioned, brought in, but lost production is going to be concerned last year at that position. Like, linebackers are your guys that make tackles, right?
Between DeQuan Jackson and Cameron Carter, they've got two pairs of big shoes to fill.
Yeah, they're huge. Like, it's what, 170 tackles? I don't know how much you got. 570 each? They have quite a few, I'm just guessing. But those two guys were the main guys on the defense last year. And now they're replacing with guys who have much less experience.
Yeah, I mean, multi-year starters. But I do think it is worth remembering, though, that Kulik did make a start in September. Okay. I believe it was against Middle Tennessee. And Wilson, for his part, like, he didn't get a ton of playing time last year. I believe he only played something like 200 snaps or something, or somewhere thereabouts. And while he did have, a 25% missed tackle rate in that time, definitely gonna have to clean that up. He did have 2.5 sacks in the season finale against New Mexico.
That's good. That's something. I don't care if it's low, but it's not. Two sacks is two sacks.
Yeah, so there's always the possibility that they could dip back into the transfer portal one more time to bring in some reinforcements. But it could also be like, they're going to go out and Norvell and defensive coordinator Freddie Banks are going to say, these are our guys. We're going to run with them. We're going to let them learn on the job. And we're going to surround them with talent that, keeps them from having to do every last thing on the field.
Yeah, that's this. If we're looking at defense, this is the biggest area where the biggest question marks with lack of returning talent, lack of starters, lack of production coming back, all new guys. So that'll be the most area, the best, not best, but the most watched area to see who could step up.
Yeah.
All right. So we mentioned they run the 4-2-5. So they play five defensive backs, which some of those guys are at the nickelback, two CBs, two safeties, obviously. They're bigger safeties because the type of defense they run, they have, like if you've seen TCU, San Diego State, kind of like almost like a 3-3-5, but a little bit different here, which is another twist on it, which is good, I think. Something to keep other teams guessing a little. So these guys are going to be asked to come in, probably help with maybe a random blitz here and there, run stop some. But they do return, four or five guys, no upperclassmen, even. Like, I guess technically they do return all five because Brandon Guzman's back, but he's not listed as the number one CB. So that's actually, I would put that as a positive because he started last year. He's going to, projected to be number two. But that's a good thing to have all these starters back, all this experience back in a league where I know they don't play San Jose State, so you take them out. But Washington State, we know, likes to throw the ball. Middle Tennessee State will throw it a bit. They play Boise, who has probably the best receiving group in the same neighborhood as CSU. So they play some good quarterbacks. You got Utah State with Cooper Laga. So that area being the most experienced could be, like, the defense set up to be quite well, like to be pretty good with who they have returning and just bringing back, eight, nine starters. And that's their deepest position group of the whole team, I think, offense and defense.
There's a chance that this could be the best secondary in the Mountain West when all is said and done.
Oh boy, big words.
Well, and you mentioned the fact that it's, you know, not only that they are bringing back like a ton of experience from last year's unit, but, you know, you have to really take a closer look. So, like, yeah, I mentioned at the onset that they found ways to improve that weren't always, like, you know, glaringly obvious. And I do think their ability to defend against the pass was one of those things. So, like, if you look at the season-long numbers, you're not really going to find a lot to write home about. Like, you know, they were, you know, 10th in the Mountain West in opponents' completion rate allowed, 61.7. You know, 6.5 yards per attempt. Although that coincidentally, that was like a tie for second with three other Mountain West teams. You know, 15 touchdowns allowed, eight interceptions. But if you narrow the focus and you set that disastrous non-conference stretch aside, and you look at what they accomplished against Mountain West opponents, things all of a sudden look a lot more interesting because they finished fourth in opponents' completion rate. You know, that figure drops to 56.1%. They were second in yards per attempt allowed, 5.8, 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, passer rating of, coincidentally, 111.11.
I see that here. Yeah,
that was third in the conference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they did all that while finishing, you know, behind only Fresno State in total passes defended during conference play. So, yeah, like this team, like, you know, obviously, you know, Jack Howell is sort of I would say the one obvious all conference candidate, but there are no weak links in this potential starting five. You know, Chigozie Anusiem, who was, I believe, the only one in the group to start every game last year, he had 9 pass breakups. He was one of 7 Mountain West defensive backs that had a PFF grade of at least 80 overall. And it may not necessarily be a coincidence that, you know, the team's fortunes and past events improved once they elevated Guzman into the starting lineup. And at the same time, you know, a week or two later, when they elevated Aiden Hector be their nickelback, you know, he had a great season. 3 interceptions, 7 pass breakups. And oh, by the way, yeah, we haven't even mentioned Henry Blackburn yet either.
Oh, yeah, pretty good.
And the number of transfers that they brought in, you know, they brought in Tyrell Grayson, who was an all-whack defensive back at Utah Tech, you know, Dominic Morris from Furman, Ron Hargy III from Oregon State. So not only is this defense, you know, this defensive backfield experienced, it's also very deep.
Yeah. They, like,
I do think, like, even if other parts of the roster scuffle here and there, that this could be a unit that keeps them in a lot of games by, you know, by being sort of that a unit, I guess you might say.
No, it could be good. Like, one thing you mentioned, like how you said later on, like throughout the year got better. They have like the anonymous coach thing in Athlon. That's one of their big things. It's they mentioned who is an opposing Mountain West assistant. They're still having a transition phase. Obviously we know that, and we'll be really young. But it's really they're super smart staff, which we were familiar with. But the main thing is you'd rather play them earlier than later because by the end of the year, they'll be really good. And they already showed that last year. So imagine now that still might be the case a little bit with some positions. But that secondary, I'm looking at their same stats you are. This for in-conference play improved drastically. I know they played Michigan. It's kind of a weird loss. But I think the improvements there overall to where they could be still good early on, but by the time end of the year, like we mentioned, offensive line, running back is a big area, linebacker, but they got the experience here in DB. So this coach is not wrong. What we see last year and what could see this year, I think it might be maybe mid-season they pick it up before end of the season, maybe.
Yeah, I didn't mention this before, but in the updated SP Plus rankings that Bill Connolly over at ESPN put out a couple weeks ago now at this point, it's worth mentioning that the Rams projected to be 77th in the country on defense. That's not that far down from where they had projected the likes of, let's say, for example, Wyoming, which was at 62, or San Diego State, which is at 56. So the potential is there. And I think that Banks has already paid dividends as a coordinator hire. So I'm very interested to see what he can do with a full year under his belt with some new pieces that he's going to have to, you know, coach up into much more prominent roles.
All right. What do we got about special teams then?
So, you know, obviously there was going to be some kind of drop off from the likes of Caden Camper and especially Ryan Stonehouse. And some of the numbers weren't, most of the numbers weren't great, but I don't think that the situation is as dire as it seems at first glance. Like, for example, you know, Patty Turner, you know, had a huge drop off in just like in yards per punt. I believe he was actually dead last in the conference last year, 39.1. But at the same time, Colorado State's net punting average was better than half the conference. I believe it was sixth overall in among Mountain West teams and 85th in the country. So it wasn't terrible. You know, I think that the bigger mystery right now is that they're also going to have to replace Michael Boyle. And the current roster has three kickers. And they brought in a, you know, transfer from Central Washington, Ashton Wolf. But I have to think that after handling kickoffs last year, Henry Cattleman is likely to be the guy that settles in and wins that job, especially since he also had prior experience, albeit briefly, as the kicker at Oregon a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Like, also, I'm on, I find Torrey Horton to touch the ball more. So, can he? He's going to be their punt returner. So, like, him and Justice Ross Simmons, like the return game, there's potential there for explosive plays too.
There you go.
I like those two guys to do something special. I don't think that either of them make like all conference preseason from the random publications out there yet.
I don't have that in front of me.
I might here. Give me a quick second here. Yeah, Torrey Horton, first team, Athon, punt return. And that's it for the two. So special teams should be above average. I have a rankings here, but my internet's going a little slow, so I'm not gonna pull it up and see exactly where they're at. But it's gonna be pretty good. All right. It is schedule time, Matt. Game by game. All right, and I have a question for him. I already know the answer, but you always ask the question you know the answer to, typically, for the most part. Mm-hmm. Your answers, barring Donald Hammond situation, for those who recall, are yours set in stone, barring any major circumstances? Remember, June 7th.
Yes.
Yes, okay. I'm guessing a barring record change would be no Clay Millen. For some reason, Jay Norville's not the coach anymore. Torrey Horton does something. Sorry. I was going to name something specific, but no longer around. I think those would consider a Hammond situation. So,
yeah, I think about this very deeply. So I'm committed to my predictions when I make them.
Gotcha. So what do you got first? They put Washington State, the Cougars, up in the Pacific Northwest, coming to town on CBS Sports Network for, I believe, a 5 p.m. local kickoff.
Yeah, so obviously the Rams are going to be highly motivated to, you know, flip the script from last year's contest where the Cougars, you know, basically ran them out of, you know, Pullman very handily. But, you know, after and the last time we saw them, of course, they were getting blown out in the LA Bowl by Fresno State.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really indicative of the kind of team they were last year. Like in that game, in particular, the bowl game, they had a lot of departures from like the transfer portal and opt outs and things like that. It was a team that was pretty solid. Like it wasn't like a championship caliber roster. But it was a roster that had, you know, plenty of dangerous individual performances. Like they were 1-4 against ranked teams, for example, 6-2 versus everybody else. And they do return, you know, a good deal of last year's impact talents. Of course, you know, Cam Ward, the quarterback that they brought in from Incarnate Word the year before, he's back on one side of the ball. I believe Nikhil Watson is also back. At running back, but most of the strength of this team, you know, perhaps counter to what you might believe, is the fact that they're also bringing even more talent back on defense, which, you know, for a unit that already finished in the top 50 last year by points per drive allowed, you know, the fact that they get to bring back Brennan Jackson and Chow Smith-Wade and other guys like that, Ron Stone Jr. You know, it's a defense that could be pretty solid. And, you know, Jaden Hicks, I forgot to mention him as well. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, they also happen to poach three different Mountain West receivers for Ward to throw to on offense. You know, Josh Kelly left Fresno State for Wazoo. Isaiah Hamilton is in Wazoo. And Kyle Williams, former freshman of the year at UNLV.
UNLV, yeah.
So we'll be able to get to see some familiar faces. I don't know that Washington State's necessarily going to be a world beater this year. I don't think they're going to be a top 25 team.
No.
But I do think that they still have a talent advantage, you know, between these two teams. And I do think that they'll walk away with a win at Canvas in this one.
Yeah, it's a home opener, so the crowd will be popping. It'll be one, everybody there. Like, Wazoo has talent. I know they're not they're still kind of doing the area thing, but maybe not quite as detailed as they have done in the past. And just, they don't remember, we haven't mentioned, did you mention Cam Ward yet, their QB?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, I must have spammed. Like, wait, did we mention that? But he's legit good. He'll test out secondary, but guess what? Secondary's experienced. I do agree with you, the talent discrepancy overall, and it's still, Norvell's still reasonably new. You have a new offensive line going up against his team. Running back, we're not sure. So it's like, there's a lot of question marks to keep pace. If this, because that's the problem. They'll still score points. Rims defense is pretty good still, but I think if Washington State gets to 30 points, they'll win the game quite easily.
It won't be 38-7 again. I can tell you that much.
No, it might be 38-21, 35-19, but I just don't think they can keep pace with this team. And Washington State doesn't need to score 40, but they need to get at about 30. I feel if they get 28 points, they're winning. So I feel pretty comfortable there. Washington State's going to win by probably double digits.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got for Colorado?
Prime time.
Excuse me.
You know what, though? Full disclosure, I said that specifically to elicit that reaction.
I know. Because we already mentioned, we'll mention again his F-650 truck, which is ridiculous and stupid. He lobbied himself to be on the cover of Madden, which, why Madden when he's a college coach? Right? Like, what is it? It's all about him. If you ever listen to Split Zone Duo, it's all about Dion, which isn't shocking to anybody. It's him building up a program, which he did great at Jackson State, but now a lot of players leaving. And if that, hopefully that kind of keep pace on some level, that because they got pretty good under him. It's about him. I'm going to wear a tank top on the sideline. I'm not wearing no overcoat or jacket. You can find me wherever you want. It's a lot of flash, but the substance, I don't know if it's there yet.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of substance, because they have brought in a legion of transfers.
So with that, I get, like, everyone's like, oh, it's me. He comes in, get out of here, you guys suck. Like, coach, we know we weren't very good last year. There's a reason for it. But the sheer numbers, I know David Ubbin, the Athletic, kept track, and I don't have that in front of me. Maybe I should have, but because I don't want to spend too much time on this game. Like overdo it, I should say. They have like literally 20 scholarship players maybe back from last year. Yes, people say, mm-hmm. Oh, it was a terrible team. They won two games. And then they bring in guys who, I know Travis Hunter was number one recruit in the country 2 years ago at safety. And he's really specifically only doing wide receiver group. I'm like,
no, he's listed as both on the roster.
Well, I know, but I mean,
wide receiver.
I get it, but you can do that when you play against Utah, against USC. You know, like, do that against, you're playing, I was going to say Cal or Stanford, but that's laughable. Arizona State, Oregon State, you're going to have him play, do all that. Then bring in Shadir Sanders, who looks pretty good. But the talent level, the difference between not just FCS, but HBCU is a step, for most teams, not as high level as FCS teams, typical, because just there's a whole segregation. Yeah, it's 50 years ago and stuff. But the talent, I'm saying who they're playing. They're not playing even teams like Weber State, who beat the crap out of Utah State, or Sacramento State. They're not even playing teams like St. Lucie State, who won five games the past year. They were not playing
teams on that level. They got a brutal schedule.
Colorado?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I just, the talent, it's like we mentioned these JUCO guys. Are these JUCO guys going to come in and be number one right away and be amazing? Usually not.
No, but But you know, the counter argument would be that they literally could not be any worse than they were last year. They were 124th in SP plus, and then also dead last in net available yards percentage and net points per drive. So we talked about that at the onset and how the Rams were subpar in both those categories. Yeah, Colorado was in an abyss by themselves. So you know, you mentioned Hunter, you mentioned Sanders. But you know, it's a numbers game because it's not just Sanders and Hunter. It's Jimmy Horn Jr., who had almost 1,000 yards at USF last year. It's Alton McCaskill, who you know missed last year with an injury at Houston, but was a 1,000-yard runner the year before that. You know, it's Leonard Payne, who they poached from Fresno State, you know, to shore up the defensive line. And like, you know, 20, 30, however many other guys that they brought in. So yeah, it's a ton of turnover. But some of those guys are going to hit.
This isn't USC bringing in Caleb Williams and like Jordan Addison, which we all know. I just think, yes, they were terrible.
But it's
terrible.
Not just that, too. Like, they also brought, you know, Sean Lewis is the new offensive coordinator.
I was going to get that.
He did it.
Their coaching staff is amazing. That's what one thing Deion needed. Like, the coaches he brings in. Didn't he bring in a former Viking? Is it Mike Tice around, too? Isn't he part of the staff as well? Former Vikings head coach?
I don't recall.
I'll need to look and see, but I know Sean Lewis coming in. I know the staff they brought in is extremely helpful. It's going to go a long ways to help support Deion Sanders, who's only head coaching, obviously, at HBCU, Jackson State. And that's a big – even though it's Colorado, still a big jump. You're in the Pac-12. It's a totally different type of sport you're playing just about. But I'm just thinking, like, yes, that bad. But when they bring in all these – like, their best receiver, MLS, left after his – spring game, and he wasn't just some nobody. He was an amazing player last year catching the ball, and he's, I'm out of here. Here's my tape for spring game. Peace out. I'm leaving. I just don't think it's going to be a long, long game, not long-term thing. It's not going to be – they're probably going to win three games. Like that 5.5 number I think I've seen, 4.5, whatever it is for win total, give me 3 or under. That's what they're winning. Like they brought in – yeah, they have Gary Harrell, a good coach. They have Sean Lewis. But they brought in Mike Tyson. Maybe that's somebody else. Trying to see here really quick. Maybe I'm wrong, but I know bringing in Sean Lewis, who left the MAC to come there, it shows a lot when he left the head coaching job to be an OC. Tim Brewster, he's the former Minnesota head coach. They have guys there who are good to help him around. I just, when your turnover 60 plus players and a lot of them come in now, like when the second transfer portal, I don't see a week 2 game where they're playing the national runners up the week prior. Their biggest rival ever the week after, they're not winning this game. I'm picking the Rams for the upset. Is it an upset? I don't know. Would you consider
it's an upset? Funny? We haven't even mentioned the words Rocky Mountain Showdown yet.
True. That's one of the biggest rivals out west. It's the only P5 G5 rivalry that happens every season.
I mean, I do think it's ultimately like a high risk, high reward maneuver. To turn the roster over as much as he has. I do think that the Buffs will be able to hold serve at home, though. So I have Colorado.
Air Force beat them like by 5 touchdowns last year.
No, that was like 2 or 3 years ago. And that team sucked. This team is gonna have some trials in the Pac-12. But I think it just has too much talent for them not to be able to edge CSU.
I don't think they have the talent this year. That's the thing. I don't think they do.
Well, I guess we'll find out. First, hold on, I'm trying to find early. You love to see it.
I just, the hype's like Dan Patrick and a few people like, hey, slow down. The hype, not there. I'm not falling for it. They're going to win like 3 games, and this is not going to be one of them.
All right.
Do we have a betting line for this game yet? I see Washington State CSU is minus 16 at home.
Or
plus 16, sorry. I don't see it. Partly because turnover, clearly huge, but the games around they're playing. TCU, CA, I know it's a rivalry game, but I guarantee you, think of this. You bring in 60 transfers. Do you think Deion Sanders cares about Colorado State? Heck no. He's like, I want to beat Utah. I want to beat Nebraska. I want to beat TCU. Like, they don't care about this game, especially him. It's not like a longtime coach who's been there. Not that any coach of recent memory has been there for many years or treats this as a big rivalry game. I guarantee Norvell's
so,
going
so
like
you
this.
Think, you think Colorado State's a trap game then?
Totally. Easily. TCU, Sanders,
okay, I can see that
Nebraska
argument.
I got reasons. I just thinking they're gonna win. That's my gut feeling. I'm going early for the upset here. Maybe upset. All right, next game. Middle Tennessee State. They lost last year at home to the Conference USA foe. All right, I gotta relax here. All right, Middle Tennessee State, week three, game number three of the year. We got nine more games. I can't keep doing this for every game here, Matt. What do you think? What's up with Middle Tennessee State? What's your first thoughts on that? Because they usually, the Blue Raiders have a reasonably good offense, put up 34 points last year, and they're usually kind of in contention for their conference for most years. Bowl game, reasonable amount.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at their 2022, and they were mostly fine. Like they got blown up real good by James Madison in week one, but then mostly settled in after that. Like they were in the 80s nationally in SP Plus in net points per drive and available yards percentage. So while they do have to replace their multi-year starter at quarterback, Chase Cunningham, they also have to replace their top three pass catchers around their running back, Frank Peasant, who's back after having almost 800 yards and 9 touchdowns last year. I think the difference in this game is going to be that, the Blue Raiders have plenty of defensive talent of their own. Teldrick Ross was number two in the country last year with 22 total passes defended. Trey Flewellen back there in the defensive backfield with him, 2 interceptions, 8 pass breakups at safety. And then the trio of defensive linemen in Zaylen Wood, Marley Cook, and Quindarius Dunnigan, who combined for 15.5 sacks and 25.5 TFLs. If the Rams haven't solved their offensive line questions, this seems like the kind of game, and I think Washington State's sort of in the same boat, where we're going to learn very quickly whether that's the case or not.
We'll see. Do you buy anything?
I do think of it as somewhat akin to last year's game against the Cougars, where I don't think it'll be as lopsided, but I'm not sure if I'm buying in enough to forecast the Rams beating the Blue Raiders on the road. So I have MTSU winning this one.
I could see that. Did you know Stockstill's been there for 17 years?
Yeah, he's been around forever.
Because we both listen to Split Zone Duo, and Stephen Goffrey lives like right there. Is like he has no clue what's going on. Aren't they better? Which are a reasonably good team. But do you buy, because he has 109 win record, 6 Power 5 wins over the course of the Power Conference wins over his near 2 decades. Conference Coach of the Year, 3 times looks like, 10 bowl games. They're like perpetually a slightly above average team in the worst conference in America. But do you buy any stuff? Because I was going to say, it's a stupid pun, so I'm not going to go to it. But they beat the crap out of Miami last year. But as you mentioned, they don't have a new quarterback now. I'm not going to say this could carry over much of anything because they play at Alabama, at Missouri to open the year. Do you think there's any momentum? Like, hey, we played Solana Bowl game last year, could carry over versus like a CSU team? Because that's going to be hard to do when you get your butt kicked by Alabama. Probably be reasonable competitive versus Missouri, but both on the road. I think they might be beat up by
the I think they are CSU. Most likely to be roughly similar in quality to what they accomplished last year.
Even with new quarterback?
I think they'll be okay. Even if they don't necessarily challenge for a conference title or anything.
Remember, Jordan Ferguson is gone too. He's not there.
Yeah. I mean, this might also be sort of the first flashpoint where, like, if Colorado State is going to challenge for a bowl game, this is the first must win on the schedule.
It's true. Yeah. So, yeah, this is a team where I'd say, yeah, that makes sense because they could be, I have 1-1, but I have in this game, I'm back and forth. I'm going lost because it's a road game. And I think coaching experience matters. And recent success of Middle Tennessee State being typically winning more games than not. So I'm going to go with them. All right. Do we have anything about Utah Tech? I didn't do much research.
I can give you an FCS minute.
That's what you should do, an FCS minute. Because this is a team that used to, if you're wondering, like, who's Utah Tech? They used to be called Dixie State until they wisely smarted up to change their name about a year ago to not Dixie State, to Utah Tech.
Yeah, I thought that had to do with, like, the forest that was nearby, though.
I'll give you the quick rundown. Would you like the some live in the area? So
yeah, why not?
It's dumb. The reason they wanted it changed because it's not the forest. They're like, it's the Red Rock because you go to Southern Utah National Parks, looks red and that type of thing. They used to be the Rebels, like kind of the rebel part of the state. But Dixie's, because it reminded people that looked like the South, essentially, kind of, for some, because they did, well, they did cotton down there, so obviously that's a connotation of what's being grown. But the reason they changed the name, because, okay, you go to the school, I'm looking for a job in Los Angeles, I'm looking for a job that's in Mississippi, or a job that's in Chicago. And like, so why is your school called Dixie State? Are you from Greensboro? You're from Mississippi? No, we're from Utah. It's like, it's not a good look, because even though the name has literally nothing to do with
branding,
that type of stuff,
what you're saying.
Like, that's why the hate. Mostly branding, and yeah, it's mostly a branding thing where it's like, in the area, it's like, yeah, we get it, but, and that didn't come to me. I never thought about that until I started hearing about it more past a couple of years, where it's when you go out of state, look for a job in Minnesota or Oregon or anywhere, it's, and you're not, literally, if you're not from Utah or maybe even Las Vegas, because they're 90 minutes away, not very far, you like, it doesn't, you're like, okay, whatever. That's what the school, we know, they know it's why. But if you go on the East Coast or anywhere that's not within Idaho, New Mexico, Utah, and Vegas, nobody's like, why is it called that? And so that's the main reason why, wasn't it? There's no forest, Matt. It's a complete desert. And people living there and the university growing is not good for the Colorado River, which you and I both need desperately to survive.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. What do you got? What's your FCS minute? Anyway, we know players
FCS minute. I'll keep it simple. It's been a rough few years in the FCS wilderness for the Trailblazers. Only 7-20 since making the jump up from Division Two. And the cold reality is that it may not get a whole lot easier in 2023. They had 7 all WAC players last year. 5 of them are gone. One of them, coincidentally, to Colorado State, Tyrell Grayson.
It's true. Yes, we mentioned that.
So while they weren't necessarily a bad team last year, they did finish 4-7, which was their best finish at the FCS level in their sort of brief history there. But you know, they're losing their do-it-all receiver, Joey Hobert, who I believe was a Walter Payton semifinalist or something like that last year. You know, his 1,250 yards and 16 touchdowns are gone. You know, they had 3 different quarterbacks who combined for, you know, 28 touchdowns and 15 interceptions, which isn't too bad, but a 51% completion rate, not great. You know, and they're replacing a ton of their players on. Long story short, this is not Sacramento State. Colorado State should roll on this one.
There we go. All right, what do we got? So now we're going into, I've went to league play. So here's what we're doing for league play. Since we're going to be talking about all these teams down the road, we're going to wink, wink, nudge, nudge, short preview to listen to the full ones later down the road. So we're not going full on 8 minutes of teams. We've been doing just over an hour. I think about an hour 10 right now.
Yeah.
So we'll give some brief notes on each team just because we got our full blown previews, and you and I probably need to just still research. Doesn't happen in a day. If we take time to do all this type of stuff. So we're not going to give everything away now. Plus we probably both need to just do a little more deep dive when we do these teams upcoming. So non-conference play, I have them 2-2. You have them at 1-3. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the way their schedule plays out, I was going to briefly run through it. At Utah State, they get a nice 3-game home stretch, Boise, UNLV, Air Force, at Wyoming, San Diego State, Nevada, then at Hawaii. So there's no real bad road stretch through the conference play, which is great. So they go to Utah State, which the past couple years, Matt, we've seen the weirdness of Coach Adazio there, the fumble, the sprint run to not get the punt off, whatever you want to call that game. These two teams have been... Last year, Utah State was just weird, right? They had a first half that was terrible, second half better. I guess the big sticky point, I guess, out of Utah State is that Cooper Legaz, the guy at quarterback, after having all the injuries last year, he's going to be a real threat against this team. But Utah State, they lose guys like Calvin Tyler Jr. They lose some wide receivers. They lose like guys like A.J. Vonchapont to BYU. A million transfers. Like, I want to say, I know I haven't looked at your portal in a while, Matt, but is it – would I be correct or close to it saying they lost the most teams to Power 5 foes via the portal? They lost a lot to the Big 12.
They're at least in the conversation for that, yeah. I completely memory hold that the Aggies won this game last year while having 4 different players throw a pass.
Let me guess. Blaine Davenport, or Bishop Davenport, Cooper Legault, Andrew Peasley, and Logan Bonner.
Terrell Vaughn.
All 4. Oh, wide receiver. for 12 on. Because was this the game where Peasley like dragged his foot to keep playing? Was that the game? Or was that a different one?
That might have been a different one.
I just remember him trying
to... But it's also worth remembering this was one of the two games, I believe, that Clay Millen did not play. You know, they had to turn to Giles Pooler, which was the third quarterback in 3 weeks during that stretch.
I forgot.
That's not going to happen again.
I hope not.
Like, I have to think that Colorado State probably wins that game last year if Millen is healthy. Mm-hmm. And given the uncertainty of the amount of talent that Utah State's having to replace right now, I'm betting on Colorado State winning this one on the road. So I have this one as a Rams win.
I like your assumption. I'm making a quick change. I'm agreeing with you. I'm like, oh, it's on the road. But I think about Utah State, what they're bringing back, what they lost. Like, I know Cooper Legault's good, but I don't know if he's that good to overcome. It's at home. I'm leaning to a slight win over Utah State.
There you go.
And then Boise State, they'll continue their streak of not beating the Broncos ever in the Mountain West.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Anything else to add to about the Boise game? Like, I'm only half kidding, but I don't think they're going to win.
No, I think we can move on to UNLV.
Is this at UNLV? Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, my mistake. I presume I put home. This was a game where one of the more tougher games to pick. How would you assess like your picking some thoughts in this game? Was this an easy loss or win, or did you kind of struggle to figure out?
No, I had to mull this one over for a while because I'm similarly bullish on the Rebels like I am on the Rams. I like the coaching hires that they made down there in Vegas, you know, bringing in not just Barry Odom, but also Michael Shear and Brendan Marion as the coordinators. You know, they definitely had their own losses through the transfer portal, but they picked up some intriguing pieces. Like the Middle Tennessee game, I think this is another must win if the Rams are going to have any hopes of winning a bowl game or of reaching a bowl game rather. I do think that they'll be able to pull this one out on the road.
I went back and forth. I'm going loss because Boise before, it's just tough. Here's the reason I have, because my overall win total, if I add this one on there, I'm way higher than I think I should be. And I'm just, when I'm looking between Utah State and UNLV, I think UNLV might be better than Utah State. And Doug Brumfield might be the better quarterback than Clay Millen, from what we've seen, potentially, just because he does a little bit more with running a touch. I like the go-go offense. I think there's something there. Because remember, like, Rebels were better than the Rams last year, nearly to a bowl game. And
it's sort of funny when you think about it, like the remarkable amount of similarities that both of these teams have. At the moment, they both have questions at running back. They both have questions in the pass rush. Both have very talented secondaries. So it's going to be a really evenly matched game, I think, one way or the other. So, like, I had to think really long and hard about this. And it really is, I think, the closest thing to a 50-50 game on CSU's schedule this fall.
Yeah, and also one big loss is Aiden Robbins from UNLV leaving to BYU.
Yes.
So that's something to consider. So I have it as a Rams loss. Air Force, I'm going toward loss as well. Here's the main thing, like one of those coaches things from Athlon. Their main thing is, it's probably what everybody says, is quarterback. Mm-hmm. Because they basically say it really depends on how they develop or who they develop at quarterback. If they have a guy there, they're one of the most dangerous teams in the league, which is true with John Lee Eldridge III. I agree with that. I'm going with a loss for CSU just because I think the Rams running the ball, who they have back there, even though that defensive front for CSU is pretty good, it's at home for the Rams. But I just don't think the Rams can keep pace.
Do you realize CSU has lost 6 in a row to Air Force?
I do now. That's a lot.
Do you also realize that they've won just 2 times against Air Force going back to 2006?
Oh boy. Was Garrett Grayson lost quarterback?
I did not realize that.
What year is that? Was Garrett Grayson the quarterback?
2013? Yeah, I believe it was.
Probably.
And then the other one was 2015.
All these great receivers. I guess Air Force defense is pretty good. That's kind of a more lopsided than I thought it was. Even more so, go Falcons.
Ram Falcon trophy on the line in this one. But yeah, I have the Falcons winning that one as well.
I also have Wyoming losing on the road. Sorry, I botched it. Crap, sorry. Bronze boot staying going to Fort Collins. I know it's at Wyoming. I just don't trust the Cowboys. I never like the quarterback situation. Peasley's there, fine. Running backs, they bring in guys who I know lose some player. Like Titus Wynn's not around anymore. They have what's his name? Shoot, D. I always get it wrong. DQ DJ. What's his?
Are you talking about DQ James?
Help me out. DQ James. I want to say DJ James. I'm like, no, DQ James. Like, whatever. He's a good running back. So they can run in whoever they want. They can toss whoever they want in running back. They've proven the past, 5 years at least, to whoever's running the ball doing well. I just don't trust Wyoming. Like, I don't trust a quarterback. Like, defense will be legit and really good. And this honestly probably might be one of the bigger upsets for me taking the Rams over Wyoming, even more so than Colorado. I just think what Rams could potentially do on defense. Because what was the score last year? It was what, a one-score game?
It was 17-13, if I remember correctly.
Here we go, 14-13.
14-13.
Yeah, Wyoming won. It's going to be something similar. I just think the Rams probably have a touch more offense. More than a touch. They have the best quarterback and best wide receivers on the field and best tight end. So they're going to win because of that.
I like the potential of CSU's offense.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the Cowboys defense a little bit more. So I have Wyoming winning that one.
All right. They're not beating San Diego State, are they?
I don't think so. I think that might be like must win number three. Mm. Because the gap between the Aztecs and the Rams on paper is not so wide. Like both teams have differing concerns that they're going to have to sort out in fall camp. For the Aztecs, sorting out the running game, getting the offensive line back on track, figuring out who's going to replace the star power on the defensive line and things like that. But they like UNLV, the Aztecs and the Rams have a few things in common. Again, strong defensive backfields, strong potential quarterback play. So again, it's not like a clear cut result in my mind. But if I had to call it like 60-40 in favor of the Aztecs, that sounds about right to me.
Okay. All right. Then we got Nevada at home, the Norvell Bowl Part 2.
That's right.
I'm going to win. Ken Wilson, he'll get there. Nevada, I guess the big concern is we'll get to Nevada quarterback, running back, replacing your favorite player of all time in Dom Peterson on the defensive line. They're replacing a lot. I just don't think Nevada's good. Nevada's still a year away from even being stiff in a bowl game, at least.
Agreed.
At Hawaii, what do you got for the final game of the year? On the road, Honolulu.
I have that one penciled in as a win.
I do too. I'm not sure. The road aspect's interesting. It is later in the year where I have them winning 3 of 4, which includes this Hawaii game. Hawaii still had a lot of new players from last year. I just don't know if they're going to be there. We don't know who's really running the ball after losing, like, Dedrick, was it Park? Kendrick Perkins. I was going to say Kendrick Perkins, the NBA guy. I'm like, wait, that's not him. The finals run tonight. I'm like, no, not him. Sorry. Parsons, apologies. They don't know who's running the ball. Their defense, fine. Secondary's okay. I think this will be a lot of points. It'll be an exciting game. I think Hawaii's still going to be in that stage to put up some points, but I got the Rams winning this one. And I am shocked at myself, Matt. I have them at 6-6.
Interesting.
What do you have them at?
So I have them at 5-7 overall, 4-4 in Mountain West play.
I could see a couple of obviously toss up question marks at CSU or CU. Colorado game is interesting. On the road to Utah State. I could see anywhere going from 2-6 wins because they could lose Colorado. They could lose Utah State. They could lose at Wyoming. Maybe Hawaii, but I think they're getting at least 4 wins. I think they can get 6 if things go well.
Oh, I think they could absolutely get 6. I think we mentioned this on the goals podcast that we did last week. They should be aiming for a bowl. And I do think that The only game that I don't necessarily feel confident about their chance, about how, about the Rams having a reasonable chance of winning that game in conference play, is the Boise State game. Because yeah, as we sort of mentioned along the way, you know, that three game stretch in particular where I have them pinned as losses right now, Air Force at Wyoming, home versus San Diego State. One, two of those games are at home, so I'm going to be underestimating that a little bit. And two, yeah, all three of those teams have their own pressing questions that they're going to need to resolve. So, like, no team in the Mountain West is really infallible this year. So if Colorado State goes out there and plays closer to their overall potential than Air Force, like if the Falcons struggle to replace the quarterback or aren't quite as explosive in the ground game, if Wyoming still can't solve their own quarterback issues, if San Diego State takes a step back on offense, all those games are winnable. So there's definitely a chance that I might be underselling them a little bit. I think the upside for this team, if everything breaks right, might be like 8 wins.
8 wins? Where are you seeing that from? Are they beating Washington State at home? Are they beating Air Force?
Okay, so you mentioned Colorado. That's one.
Yeah. Okay.
I have Middle Tennessee as a loss, but they could beat the Blue Raiders.
I could see
the three teams that I mentioned, Air Force, Wyoming, San Diego State, that's five right there.
Okay.
In addition to the five that I penciled out right now.
Gotcha. Okay. That's a pretty bold prediction, 8 wins.
I'm not saying that's a prediction. Well, I mean, it's a possibility.
Let me rephrase that. To say they can get 8 wins, it's still a bold, well, not bold prediction, but a bold statement that their ceiling is 8 wins. I don't think you're too far off, because if you look at my 6-6, if they beat Middle Tennessee State and UNLV, that's 8 right there.
And so, you know what? And one last thing, something that Rams fans might already be aware of. Again, we mentioned at the very top, Jay Norvell went 3-9 in his first year in Nevada. You know what his record was in the second year, 2018?
Let the people know.
8-5.
Oh, 8-5. All right. Okay.
So you never know. Like I said, I remain bullish. I freely acknowledge that I might be hesitating just a touch. But if they can fix the offensive line, this team could do some serious damage in Mountain West play.
I'm just not sure. Like, I think they could do it, but I just still, my 6-6 seems like actual prediction. I'm hesitant to stick there. I'm going to. I'm probably leaning a little bit under that, but I think there's later in the year, I think there's wins on the schedule. Like you said, Wyoming doesn't scare anybody, or they should. Sorry, let me apologize. Overly too much. Like, if the Rams offense gets going, they could beat Wyoming. Nevada, we're still building up. Hawaii, same thing. San Diego State's very difficult, even though they have their issues with running back situation, losing defenders like Patrick McMorris to Cal, and new offensive coordinator Ryan Lindley. So there's going to be some changes there a little bit. I don't think they'll win, but there's some cracks there. Air Force quarterback, what if it doesn't go well? Like, there's, like I said, like, on their schedule, I'm not necessarily agreeing with you that Boise State, like, the only team they're probably not going to win, but that's pretty close. Them and San Diego State are the closest teams, I'd say, because they missed San Jose State, which is good for them. They missed Fresno State, that's good for them. So there's that. But yeah, I'm going 6-6. So what your prediction, 5-7 right now, maybe 8 wins?
Maybe.
Doable.
We'll see.
Doable. Anything else you want to add about the Rams here? Any spicy takes? Yeah, any pretty spicy, any bold predictions or anything else you want to add? Is Torrey Horton going to win the Blitnikoff?
I don't know if I'm ready to commit to that just yet, but I do think it'll be very good once again.
On our spreadsheet where you put potential candidates win awards, is he your guy?
Probably. For the Blitnikoff.
Who else is in there? Who? What other receiver are you gonna put in there?
I don't know. I gotta think about it. Let's get out of here. We can talk about that more off the air.
That's fine. I'm like, there's nobody out there like him. All right. So appreciate you listening, Rams fans. We're optimistic that bowl game potentially could be in your future. So check us out, MWR.com. If you're not a Rams fan, appreciate you listening. The order will come out via you guys on our Twitter at MWCWire when you vote. So vote as much as you can, which I think is just once on Twitter, unless you want to make burner accounts and vote more. Do what you got to do. Tell your friends. Listen to the show. We'll have other stuff online, MWR.com, looking at other opponent previews, some predictions as well coming online during June before KF could go into July. So we'll see you next time, and just keep hitting that subscribe button. We'll have all the previews, one down, 11 to go.